Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out for a little bit during the Steve Cochran Show. It's Monday morning, and that means what you just heard is it's time to take a look at the weekend box office and review the new movies. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to talk box office and movies. Well, let's welcome them to the show right now. And here is Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
How are you?
Very good.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, you're going to give us a little report in a little bit.
Yeah.
About South by Southwest, the film festival. How many movies did you see total in how many days?
You know, I have to do sort of a more exact count. I got a list here that included a bunch of stuff that I saw beforehand and even afterwards.
Okay.
So it's quite a big list, but I did see, I think, over at least over 20 while I was in town.
Oh, God. Okay.
It's closer to 50 when you count all of them.
When you count everything. Closer,
yeah.
Closer to 50 when you count stuff that you saw beforehand or even, you know, things beforehand but did play at South by Southwest.
Correct.
Okay. I'm at the IMDb website right now.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, the Mission Impossible trailer is, the teaser trailer is out.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet.
I have not seen it either. Who directed it?
Christopher McQuarrie.
Oh.
Jack Reacher.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He gets a different director for every one of those movies, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Cool. I'm looking forward to it. The last one kicked ass.
You're going to like the teaser.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk about box office first, gentlemen.
Hey.
I believe you called this one, man.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I mean, well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the list here, the box office. Is the official title of this movie the Divergent series Insurgent?
Yeah.
That's the actual official...
Right.
That's the actual official title of it.
Yeah, as in the Twilight Saga, New Moon.
Oh, okay.
See? Yeah.
All right. Well, it made $54 million over the weekend, which is pretty much close to what you called.
Yeah, it's just slightly below what the original made last year, which is also what I predicted last year after I saw how horrible the first movie was. I go, this thing is not going to win any new fans on home video.
Mm.
So.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I was just going to call it Insurgent, but it's called...
No, please, by all means, just call it Insurgent.
The Divergent series Insurgent.
By the way, I found on Facebook that if you add Divergent and Insurgent, you get Detergent.
That's what...
Like J-Lo, like Bennifer, that kind of thing?
I don't know. It's just a funny little joke.
Well, when I was talking about this Friday morning with Steve Cochran on his show in the first hour of the show, we were hanging out because I hang out with him on Friday morning and on Monday morning. And he was like, okay, what's going to be in the movie theaters this weekend? And I told him, and he predicted that the next movie would be called Detergent.
Oh.
So that.
Okay.
So. Or is it going to be split? Is it going to be Deter and just Gent because it's going to be split into two movies?
Oh, it's split into two. Oh,
yeah.
they're doing that again?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Okay, so number two, Cinderella, $34 million. This thing's doing really good business.
Yeah, the Disney plan's working.
Yeah, it's up to $122 million. Is this like the biggest movie that Kenneth Branagh's ever made?
Yeah. Oh, it will be once it passes Thor.
Right.
Yeah, which it probably will.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Number three, Run All Night, with $5.1 million, bringing its total up to 19. Those aren't taken numbers.
No.
We haven't talked because you weren't with us last week, Eric. I liked Run All Night.
I did too.
I thought it was good, man. And I was actually surprised at how much I liked it. Colin and I gave it a good review last week.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Yeah. Number four, The Gunman, with $5 million. Sean Penn, a big box office draw.
Yeah, from the director of Taken.
From the director of Taken, exactly. Number five, Kingsman: The Secret Service. $114 million. See, this is a movie that I never expected to make over $100 million.
It's a movie that won't go away.
Seriously. And I mean, I liked it. I think it's a good movie, but I just never expected it to make the kind of money it's making now.
Yeah.
So, number six is Do You Believe? What the hell? What the hell is that?
It's a Christian movie.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Did anybody see it?
Nope. About 4 million people worth.
Well, yeah, $4 million worth. Well, what is it? Do we know what it is?
I know Mira Sorvino's in it.
Come on.
I think the title is kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, we have, last year, what was Heaven Is For Real was last year, and God's Not Dead. So
right.
Now it's Do You Believe?
Boy, oh boy, but there's a market for these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly. Wow. All right. I don't even know what that is. boy, Mira Sorvino, what happened to her, man?
She's in a movie that's at South by Southwest, actually.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah. A good one, too.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll hear about that. We'll hear
Sean,
about
Sean Astin is in this thing, too.
All right.
And Delroy Lindo. Oh, and Ted McGinley.
Yep.
Oh, God.
And Brian Bosworth as Joe.
Wait. Brian Bosworth?
Brian Bosworth, Cybill Shepherd, Lee Majors.
Wait a minute. What's going on here?
I don't know.
Brian Bosworth as in Stone Cold Brian Bosworth?
That same, the very same. The Boz.
By the way, I love that movie.
A lot of people do, actually.
Stone Cold, that movie rules.
I know a lot of people that do.
And Lance Hendrickson rules in that movie. Okay, let's go to the next. Number seven is the second best exotic Marigold Hotel with $3.4 million. Number eight is Focus. Wow, man. 4 weeks out, and hasn't made $50 million yet, and it's a Will Smith movie.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. And his son's not even in it.
Nope. His son will never be in anything ever again.
Yeah, that's true. Number nine, Chappie, which is now up to $28 million. And number 10, another movie that won't die, like The Kingsman. The SpongeBob movie continues to chug along.
Still hanging in there.
$158 million for the SpongeBob Has the Square Pants.
Yep.
So, well, there you go. Was this expected? Does the box office make sense to you this week, Eric?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think everyone was sort of expecting the Divergent series, Insurgent, to take number one. I think the projections were a little higher in some places for it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been saying for the better part of a year that I don't expect the sequels to do any bigger business than the original. And this one, I mean, like you said, this one did just slightly lower than what the first film did, which is not, you don't see that a lot for sequels that build buzz, especially event pictures like this.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's a good opening weekend, but I think overall it's a, you know, slight disappointment for Lionsgate.
Now, did the last one open around this time last year at the same time? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that like when they're going to open these things now? They're going to be March openers?
I think they're all March openers for the next 2 years, I believe. The film last year made $150 million in the U.S., and then it only made $138 million overseas. So, you know, I mean, that's where these movies, you know, do even bigger box office. The Hunger Games, you know, did over $400 million just the last one last year.
Yeah.
For God's sake, The Fault in Our Stars made more than Divergent last year.
Yeah. Well, that was
worldwide.
Yeah.
So
now these Divergent books are they continuing or is it done? I mean, did they? You know,
no, I think it's. I think it was three books.
Three books, and
like,
that's it.
Like The Hunger Games, yeah. And then
okay.
They're splitting the final chapter.
Okay. All right. Well, the Divergent series, Insurgent, is your top moneymaker with $54 million over the weekend. All right. Well, there you go. That's your box office. Insurgent number one, Cinderella number two, Run All Night number three, The Gunman number four, Kingsman number five. Those are your top five movies of the week. Here on WGN, where we're talking about box office and movies. So let's get to the movies. We've got a bunch to talk about. And then, by the way, Eric, we're going to have you hang on for a little bit and give us a segment or two about the stuff that you saw at Sundance. Well, you did go to Sundance.
Close enough.
But South by Southwest.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Great. Listen, let's start off with, Eric, tell me about the hunting ground.
Okay. Speaking of Sundance, that's where this film premiered, and it's the latest film from great documentarian Kirby Dick. And his last film was The Invisible War, about sort of the cover-up of sexual assault, or more to the point, rape, of women in the military. And this is kind of a de facto sequel in a way, in that it deals with the sort of epidemic, in a way, of rape on college campuses. And the title, you know, basically refers to that, is that parents sending their children out for an education, women particularly, and they come back where one in four women on college campuses will end up being raped by someone on campus.
That is a crazy statistic.
It's a ridiculous statistic.
Man.
And then the fact is that a number of these things are even go unreported because women are obviously still afraid, and college campuses are sort of complicit in this cover-up. Many of them, there are so many college campuses that even report that they have zero rapes on campus throughout the school year, which means that either they're lying or these things are just not being reported. And this movie follows not just the statistics, but also a pair of young women who were victims on campus and have sort of parlayed their trauma, if you will, into basically becoming sort of spokespeople and getting other women across the country to open up about this epidemic. It deals with all different types of situations with campuses are sort of getting the women to basically not admit that there was a rape, downplay charges. Then it gets into sections about student athletes who are involved and the cover-ups that get involved with that, which a lot of these people are not really named throughout the film until they actually get to the name of Jameis Winston, the Florida State quarterback, who many believe is actually going to be the number one draft pick here in Chicago come next month. So this is as searing a documentary as you're going to see this year. I mean, Kirby Dick has crafted some amazing films in the past, not just The Invisible War, but also Twist of Fate. Is that the name of the film?
Yeah.
The man who finds out that a priest that abused him as a child moved in pretty much right down the or next door to him. So it's a really kind of a must-see piece of work, especially if you have daughters, if you have children of people, anyone who's going into college, male or female. This is something that people are going to want to take a look at. It's kind of film that makes your blood boil, really, because you understand. You know this stuff goes on. This is not just, trumped-up charges and things. This is another, like The Invisible War. People, need to talk about that movie more as well. But this is really one of the best films of the year so far.
Okay. All right. It's playing at the Landmark Century Center Cinema at Clark and Diversey. It's called The Hunting Ground. All right, guys, hang on, okay? We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we got more movies to review. It's Nick DiGilio. Colin and Eric join me every Monday morning to review the new movies, and we're going to continue to do that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And it's me, and we're doing the movie reviews. It's Monday morning. Right now, Colin and Eric are with us to review the new movies. And welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Colin, why don't you tell us about Spring?
All right. This is a little indie sort of horror hybrid kind of a film. Hard to categorize. but it tells the story of a guy named Evan who goes off to Italy after his mother dies. And takes a sort of aimless journey once he gets there. He's sort of just backpacking around the place. His series of meetups brings him to this farmhouse where he takes a live-in job to make money. And then he meets Louise, a sort of mysterious woman who he mistakes for a prostitute at first. She's not, but this encounter sort of leads to a before sunset-like relationship where the conversations they have are, you know, rather leisurely, but also, you know, revealing. Evan is, you know, still dealing with his anger. Louise is a little more outspoken, except for the fact that she's harboring a very deep, dark secret about what she really is. And I don't mean professionally, but rather, let's say, as a species. It's a secret that, you know, gradually comes into play here and keeps the film suspenseful in many different ways. It's a really interesting film that really wouldn't work. It wouldn't work if the chemistry between these two actors wasn't there, but it is. They're played by Lou Taylor Pucci and Nadia Hilker, and they take what could have been a very silly film and a very silly premise, but they've created, I think, a convincing relationship film with elements of horror and or sci-fi that works much better than it should. This is one of those films where the less you know going in, the better the experience. I mean, that's what I experienced when I saw it. I saw this thing back in October, so my memory of it is a little sketchy, but I just remember walking out thinking this was a pretty fantastic little film that should be seen. It's only playing at Facets right now. This is not a movie I can't say too much about, except that I really like it, and I think people should seek it out.
All right, cool. It's called Spring, and it's at Facets. What did you think, Eric?
This is my favorite film of the year so far.
Okay.
It was my favorite film at the Toronto Festival last year where it premiered. I still haven't seen a better film that's been released this year so far. Everything Colin said about this thing is absolutely on the nose. I mean, I think a lot of people, even when it premiered there, there's sort of like, you know, trying to come up with the easiest possible way to describe it. And the easiest way to do that is basically say it's the Before Sunset, you know, series with a monster. That's sort of the best way to describe it.
Right. I remember your review of this when you talked about it after you saw it at the festival.
Yeah, I don't think Lou Taylor Pucci's ever been better in a movie. Nadia Hilker is sort of a real fine. And the chemistry is what sells this thing. I mean, it's a film that has horror elements to it. People who are looking for that aspect of it will not be disappointed. But this really is a film about these two people and the way they, like Colin said, sort of masking these traumas that they've got in their lives. Both of them having sort of these continuing traumas that they don't know how to get over. And by finding each other are sort of a way to suppress the anger and guilt and all these other things that go along with what she actually is. And I think the movie deals with it in a human way, in a very realistic way. It doesn't really pander for easy cliches and easy answers. I think the reveal when the two of them, you know, really understand who the other person is. It's handled really, again, realistically and kind of beautifully, and it ends on a really great note. This is my favorite film of the year so far, and I urge people to check it out. If you can't get the Facets, I believe it is on video on demand as well. So people should find it wherever they can because it really is a really special film.
Okay, so that's Spring. All right, very cool. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about The Gunman?
Okay. As we mentioned, this is from Pierre Morel, the director of Taken, and a very slightly underrated film called From Paris with Love with John Travolta.
And District B-13.
He did District B-13?
Yes, he did.
Oh, never mind. Okay. Never mind. Yeah, he's a pretty good action director.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and well, now he's got Sean Penn, who apparently is morphing into the next Liam Neeson, as some people are sort of saying.
Well, it's funny because, like, Liam Neeson, you know, recharged his career at 54.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how old Sean Penn is.
There you go.
So.
Yeah. And Liam Neeson wasn't exactly taking his shirt off for Taken. Not that anyone would accuse Liam Neeson of not being a man.
Yeah.
But Sean Penn is, you know, he's in that Tom Cruise mold where he's very happy to take his shirt off because he's clearly been working out.
I remember, I'm sorry, I have to mention this. There was a review, and I can't remember, I wish I could attribute this quote to the reviewer. I don't remember who the reviewer was, but one of my favorite quotes of all time was that stupid couples retreat.
Yes.
Right? With Vince Vaughn and Favreau.
Favreau and Bateman, yeah.
Yeah. one of the quotes that I read, I don't know if it was, maybe it was Phillips, but it said that John Favreau was aggressively shirtless. Which is one of my favorite quotes of all time, you know, where it was kind of unpleasant to see John Favreau aggressively shirtless, whereas, like, Sean Penn looks great, you know.
No, he certainly looks good for his age, and it's nice to see him surfing at the beginning of the movie, very Spicoli-like.
But
he plays a guy that is working in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes.
And he is part of a sort of a special contract agency or special a group that's contracted by someone who's interested in sort of manipulating the mining contracts that are currently going down there. And that leads to him being the assassin on the guy that's in charge of said mining contracts. So he after he pulls the job, he flees, and then 8 years later, in almost sort of like a Watchmen type feel, that's all I kept thinking about while I was watching this movie, someone is taking out members of the team that he was involved with. And one of those team members involved was played by Javier Bardem, who for the last 8 years has been looking after the woman, the love interest of Sean Penn, that he vowed to take care of, and he did so by basically marrying her. So it's 2014 now, and Sean Penn's looking for the people that are involved in taking him out and why. And then leads to a lot of confrontations. Maybe not a lot, but here and there an action scene pops up where someone goes up, tries to kill Sean Penn, and he ends up killing them instead. At some point in between the action scenes, I just got this weird idea that Sean Penn, who's listed as a co-screenwriter on this film, as well as a producer, I believe, he knows a little bit too much about this world in a way, and I think, and it made me think that maybe all of his humanitarian efforts that we've seen on television and that he talks about all the time is really just sort of a Chuck Barris-like front for actually pulling these jobs. That's what I kept thinking about, and it entertained me more than the movie actually did. When it does get to its action sequences, they're fairly well done. But there's just not enough of them to truly recommend if you're looking for something action-oriented, and if you're looking for something a little smarter and a little more conspiracy-based, you're not really going to get that either.
All right, we have to break. When we come back, I'll give you my review of it. Colin, you haven't seen it, right?
I have not seen it.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll give you my review of The Gunman. It's the movie reviews on Monday morning on 720 WGN. More coming up right after this. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's a Monday morning. Well, that means a little bit later on, we're going to hear a jokey time from my dad. But right now, we reviewed the box office, and now we're reviewing the new movies. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com are joining me, as they do every week, to review the new movies. Eric gave us his review of The Gunman. Colin hasn't seen it, but let me give you my thoughts on it. I actually liked it. I really did. I don't think it's as quite as exciting as, you know, Taken or District B-13. But I liked it. I thought Sean Penn was well cast in it. I was compelled by it for the entire running time of the movie. I thought it was an intriguing premise that was kind of original that I hadn't really seen in an action movie in a very long time. And I think Sean Penn has the ability to sort of reinvent himself as an action star. I really do. Now, this is the first, like, flat-out, I'm going to kick ass and shoot people action movie that he's done, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back and look at some of the other stuff that has had action in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like State of Grace and
right.
You know, but that's the State of Grace is not a flat out action movie, obviously.
Oh no, no.
You know, but he's been in movies before where he's fired guns and gotten into fist fights.
Yeah, the Interpreter has some.
That's right. Yeah, the Interpreter. Yeah, exactly. But this is the first one that's just sort of an unapologetic, flat out. I'm going to beat some butts and shoot some guns, and I think for the most part it's successful. I don't think it's a great movie. But I like the direction that Sean Penn is going in, and I hope that he pursues that, because I think he would be a great action star to follow. I really like him. I thought Javier Bardem was really having a good time in this movie.
I think he was really drinking.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think he was just having a blast, and he was a lot of fun to watch. And you can't go wrong with Stringer Bell. You can't.
Oh, yes, you can. I dispute that.
Do you really?
Anyone who's less essential in this movie, it's Stringer Bell, who actually doesn't appear until, like, the 78-minute mark.
Yeah, it takes a long time to Stringer Bell to show up, yeah.
And then he offers Sean Penn, like, you know, like, well, here, you call me if you need help. And then at the end, he calls him and he shows up. That's his entire role. And he's second billed.
Yeah, well, he's Stringer Bell, man.
No, he's not Stringer Bell. Stringer Bell's dead.
Well, anyway, I liked it. I'm recommending it. You know, I thought Sean Penn, it seemed to be having a really good time, and it's a well-made movie. It's not a great, it's not, I don't think it's as good as Taken. I don't think it's as good as, I don't even think it's as good as the Travolta movie.
No. From Paris with Love.
Yeah, From Paris with Love, which I actually think is a vastly underrated movie. But I liked it nonetheless. I thought it was entertaining, and so I was fine with it. So I'm recommending The Gunman.
All right.
Okay, Colin.
Yep.
Why don't you tell us about the Divergent series, Insurgent?
All right.
Now, Eric, you have not seen this, right?
I have not seen this.
Oh, boy. All right. Here we go.
All right. Well, this is your little follow-up to your little Divergent film. And in it, our little heroine, Triss, played by Shailene Woodley, still a fugitive on the lam from the overlords who have divided the city of Chicago into factions based on everybody's abilities, because that sort of thing's going to happen in the future, so everybody get ready. And for those of you who need the update as to what this Divergent thing is, Triss is a Divergent, which is someone who doesn't fit into a faction because she has unlimited abilities, and that's just the kind of person that the government doesn't want out there in the world, leading a revolution that will bring about the downfall of the world's famous life or death game show. That's Hunger Games. I'm sorry. Anyway, Triss and her punky guy friend named Four. that's the number four. Escape from a hippie commune. They hop on a train and end up with more warrior-like people who are kind of a commune that doesn't take an instant liking to her. Meanwhile, the ruler of the factions, Janine, played by Kate Winslet, she came back for more. She's trying to capture a Divergent that will help her open this mysterious box that was found when Triss's mother was killed. Speaking of mothers, Four's mother has just been discovered, and it turns out she faked her death and is now the leader of an underground revolution. And she's played by Naomi Watts. So there's a lot going on here. But it's basically it's chase scene after chase scene after chase scene A lot of buildings crumbling, a lot of glass breaking in slow motion, a lot of that stuff that we saw from the first one. The director, Robert Schwentke, really likes overhead shots of everything. Seriously, this movie is, there's a drinking game for this movie every time there's an overhead shot of something. I will say this, it is a slightly better film than the first film. I know that's not saying much. I really couldn't stand the first film because it was so redundant and made up of nothing but scenes that annoy me, where the person has to prove they are who they are and prove that they're the one, and we already know they're the one, but we got to sit through the training film anyway. This movie has far less of that, none of that really, but at the same time, it is your fairly conventional bridge film where, revolutions start up, alliances change from the first act to the second act to the third act. Miles Teller is still kind of playing his D-bag role in this. But I will say it's a slightly better film because it's just got a little bit more action in it, where, things are actually at stake, unlike the first film. There's a scene in this film where Shailene Woodley's hooked up to this, these cables, and is sort of having an action scene with herself. That's actually kind of exciting.
Yeah.
That scene in and of itself is pretty darn good. As for the rest of the movie, like Eric said, if you don't like the first film, the first film is not going to win any new fans, and I'm not a new fan. But this was a slight step up from the first film, if only because the story is a lot different. There's a lot more going on, and Shailene Woodley is very appealing and easy to watch in anything, just about anything. Not the first film so much, but this one I think she gives a better performance in. I can't really recommend it, but it's as sequels go, it's a little bit, slightly better.
Okay. why don't you be a little more enthusiastic?
Yeah, I know, right?
I think I'm going to rush out right now and see it.
I liked it. Okay. And I hated the first movie. I thought the first movie was terrible, but I actually really liked this movie. And I'm stunned by the fact that I liked it. I really love Shailene Woodley. I think she's just great. I think the action is much better in this movie. Yes, you're right. This director enjoys overhead shots. There's no question about it. But it's a much more interesting movie. It's a much more exciting movie than the first one. I mean, the first one was just dire. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, come on. There's a lot more going on here. The performances are much more interesting. There's a lot more for Shailene Woodley to do in this movie than at all in the first one. And I just thought the action sequences were well done, and I thought it was exciting, and I liked it. Now, I'm not going to run out and read the books, but I'm certainly not I'm certainly not looking forward to the third movie, which I believe the same director is going to direct, which gives me hope. Although this guy did direct, he's directed some crappy movies.
Oh yeah,
I mean he directed Red. I like Flight Plan. I'm like the only person on the planet that liked Flight Plan. It's only because Jodie Foster's in it. I actually think this might be the best movie this guy's ever directed, and so I enjoyed it. I feel bad for liking it.
How dare
There's
you?
Another ringing endorsement.
But that's the thing. I texted you, Eric, when it was over, and like after I saw it, I was like, "What the hell? I liked it."
I thought I was dreaming. I honestly did.
Yeah. I was like, walked out. I'm like, wait a minute. What the hell?
Like my own personal Vanilla Sky.
All right. We got a break. And when we come back, you know what? I haven't seen it. And I'm very upset that I haven't seen it. But you guys have to review It Follows when we come back. It was the one movie this weekend that I was most looking forward to, and I couldn't get to it. But it does come on demand next week, correct?
Well, it's not on demand this week?
I looked for it. It's not.
No, it's the rare indie horror film that's getting an actual theatrical release before anything else.
Yeah. I just wish, I want to see it. Okay, you guys hang on, and we'll get reviews from Colin and Eric for the new horror film, It Follows, which has such a great and really intriguing premise, and we'll get what they think about that coming up. And then Eric is going to give us a full rundown of all the good and bad stuff that he saw at South by Southwest, right here on 720 WGN. Movie reviews continue. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join us every Monday morning to talk box office and movie reviews. And Eric is going to stick around for a little bit afterwards so we can get a rundown on all of the movies that he saw at South by Southwest. Wait a minute. Hold on. There we go. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, tell us about It Follows. Now, you've talked about this film before on the show.
Yeah, this is another Toronto film from last year.
So let's hear about this one.
Okay, this is a horror film that stars Micah Monroe as a teenage girl who goes out on a date with a new guy in town, if you will. And they have a very successful first date in a way. The guy seems a little bit paranoid when they go to the movies, but they calm down and calms down enough to have sex with her. And next thing you know, he is drugging her and has her tied to a chair in sort of an abandoned building in her underwear. Now, this sounds like a lot of really typical bad setups for torture porn type movies. But let me tell you where this thing is headed. He has her tied to the chair for a reason. And he explains to her that he has been carrying around something with him. And he has now, not to put too fine a point on it, has basically kind of sexually transmitted it to her. And what it is some sort of entity that just will constantly follow you around. And the only trick is to not let it catch you. That's basically the premise of this movie. So she has this thing now that is now going to follow her around for the rest of her life unless she can pass it along to someone else sexually. So that is the setup of this movie. Needless to say, it is a pretty big metaphor, if you will. But what this movie has in spades is a lot of creep and a lot of ideas. And it's really kind of beautifully filmed as horror movies go. The creep factor is definitely on high throughout this film. As her and her friends now basically trying to solve this problem. And like all great horror movies in recent years, it seems to end up in a swimming pool. this is one that's really going to take people by surprise. There's some people that are going so far to call it one of the best horror films of the last decade. Some people, to put the Babadook from last year on that list.
Yeah.
This one is certainly getting a lot of praise. I don't think I'm quite as high as some of those people. Like I said, it is a pretty giant metaphor, and it handles it in a really interesting way and not so heavy-handed. It definitely has you thinking when you leave the movie. You can't really say that about most horror films or most films in general, regardless of genre. I think when the film starts to sort of establish its own rules for what this entity is, and some of the decisions that are made on behalf of those rules, I think are a little redundant. Some people have argued with me that teenagers kind of think stupidly, whether they're in a horror movie or not. So the way they try to solve it, I think, lessens the impact a little bit, but doesn't lessen the impact of the storytelling or the horror factor that's involved. Spring, it was definitely my favorite film horror film from Toronto last year, and still currently my favorite film of the year. But if you're a horror fan, you have to check this movie out.
Yeah. God, I can't wait to see it. All right, Colin, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is a pretty terrific film. Eric mentioned, you know, how beautifully shot it is. This is a movie that is borrowing influences, you know, from Carpenter, from Cronenberg.
First director I thought of when I heard the plot was Cronenberg. That was the first director I thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can also argue a little Argento, especially with the score. The score is very goblin-esque.
Oh boy!
So this is a director who knows his stuff, and is borrowing from all the right people. And like Eric said, it's got a wonderful feeling of creep and dread that you don't see in too many horror movies these days. And the cast pulls it off, you know, with, again, just like with Spring, with what could have been, you know, what seems like a very silly premise is sold pretty well thanks to a pretty great cast. And this is a second film from this guy, and I never saw the first film he made. It's called The Myth of the American Sleepover. Eric, did you see that or no?
I did. I was not as high on it as some people were, but it's a film that was a South by Southwest film from some years ago, and a lot of people kind of swear by that movie, and I'm kind of curious to give it another look.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely curious to give it a look. And
his name is David Robert Mitchell, by the way.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, so this is definitely one I recommend, Nick. If you can see it on the big screen, you should.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, you know, I mean, video on demand, I'm glad it's a movie that's going to be available for people to see. But really, this is kind of a theatrical experience, in my opinion.
Cool.
And definitely worth the admission price.
All right. It's at the River East right here downtown, and the Music Box, and in Evanston, the Century 12 in Evanston. So it's in three theaters if you want to check it out. It Follows. Very, very cool. All right, I'm looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one. Well, listen, what do we got? What do we got next week, guys?
We got Get Hard next week with the Ferrell and the
Kevin
Hart.
Yeah.
We have Home, the new animated film.
Yeah, you know, I wish they would advertise that a little more.
are they advertising it well? I haven't really noticed.
Oh my God, man!
Really?
Oh.
Okay.
I mean, if I hear Jim Parsons say, my arms are up and like I just do not care, because at one point he's dancing and he can't, you know. And
I get it.
His arms are up and he just does not care. I might put my foot through the TV. I don't know. But it's the people who made, because they're saying that it's from the people who made the Dragon movie.
It's a Fox film.
Yeah, it's from DreamWorks.
It's DreamWorks, right?
Yeah.
So they're just saying it's the studio, right? So it's not the...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, okay. Right. So they're trying to sucker me in, is what they're doing.
Yep.
You won't be fooled by any of that.
I'm not going to be fooled by
that.
You're
going to see the Divergent series again.
That's right. That's right. And the full title, by the way, Divergent series, The Insurgent. Insurgent.
Right.
Yes. Insert Insurgent here.
I can't wait to see it.
It's actually not bad, man. I'm telling you.
Okay.
I'm telling you. All right. Well, we will talk to you. Colin, we'll talk to you again next week, my friend.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thank you.
See you. Bye.
Okay, there you go. And Eric, hang on, okay?
Okay.
Because when we come back, we're going to get some reviews from the South by Southwest Film Festival that Eric just went to. I think he saw 1,700 films. Yeah, I think close to 1,700 films. Well, we checked out the box office. We reviewed the new movies. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for both talk and text. And Eric Childress is hanging out with us a little longer here so that we can talk about South by Southwest Film Festival. All right, so Eric, a total of movies that you saw... That played at South by Southwest was close to 50.
Yeah, the entire list that I made up is 47 movies that I had seen that played South by Southwest. Four or five I had seen at previous festivals.
Mm-hmm.
I saw 24 on the ground at South by Southwest, and then another 23 beforehand, afterwards, and like I said, at other festivals.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, you know how it goes. We you know, you cover the film festivals for us here on the show, and South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas. And how many days were you there?
6 days.
6 days. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about it. Pick whatever you want to tell us. Tell us.
Okay.
Pick one. And let's go.
Well, South by Southwest is not quite like Sundance, and where Sundance is sort of a buyer's market, a lot of independent films. We certainly have that at South by, but we might as well just get right to it. There are a lot of sort of movies that we can sort of sneak preview for the audience.
Gotcha.
Here that will definitely be coming out. And we might as well start with the movie that you have been looking forward to your entire life, apparently, because although not on the schedule at South by Southwest, on Sunday night last week, they managed to sneak in a midnight screening of Furious 7.
Yeah!
So let's get into it, shall we? So I think we have reviewed all of the Fast and Furious movies on your show over the years, dating back to 2001. That's how long we've been reviewing Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah.
2001, right? It was the first
2001
one?
2001 was the first. Summer of 2001. I remember my ex-girlfriend Helena and I went to see it.
Oh, my God.
And,
unbelievable.
And I was losing my mind and jumping up and down like a monkey during most of the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one that I don't like, because I love them all.
Yeah.
Is the one that's just called Fast and Furious.
The fourth one.
That's the only one that I'm not crazy. The other ones I love.
You like the second one, the Singleton one?
Oh, no, that one sucks. Yeah, Too Fast, Too Furious sucks, yeah.
2 and 4 are really bad.
Yeah, 2 and 4 are bad, but Tokyo Drift rules.
Okay.
And then the rest of them all, I mean, I think the rest of them all kick major ass.
This is where you and I have disagreed over the years. But it's such a weird series in that it's a film that the longer this franchise has gone on, and obviously the more successful it's gotten, critics have sort of laid down their guards on this thing.
Yeah.
I admit I was not a fan of the series for 6 movies now. And by the 5th one, it opened with a really terrific action sequence that I actually kind of applauded. And I'm just like, okay, well, this series is starting to gain a little bit of steam. And I thought the last one almost pulled it off. I wasn't quite as high as some people were.
Yeah.
But so now we're at Furious 7. Paul Walker has left us.
Yeah.
In real life.
Now, do they handle it awkwardly in the film?
No. I say that, we've had, experiences where movies have lost actors in the past.
Well, I mean, The Crow is one of the...
The Crow, Brainstorm,
right.
Now even with The Hunger Games with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right.
And no, I don't think they handle it awkwardly at all.
Okay.
Actually, because you're dealing with a film that with a plot line that doesn't really make any sense to begin with.
Sure, of course.
So to make any sort of leaps in logic in how they present how the characters are handled,
yeah,
it's really not even that noticeable.
Well, they brought Michelle Rodriguez back from the dead.
I know.
In this series,
exactly. So you can sort of see there are moments in the film that you can see are sort of done post. Post Walker, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Heads are sort of put on his brother's body.
Right.
And you can kind of notice it if you know what you're looking for. But I'll just say that they don't want us to tell anyone, obviously, how they handle the sort of the fate of his character, if you will.
Yeah.
I'll just say that they handle it very nicely.
Okay.
I'll just say that. But back to the movie. it's a story that really makes very little sense, even in the sense of the Fast and the Furious world. Where we last left everyone, Jason Statham was the brother of the last villain that they were after, and they have now, with his timeline, have figured out how to get the Tokyo Drift timeline completely into this series, a series that is more complicated than the Saw series, if you will. as far as timelines are concerned.
Right.
And maybe that's why they brought on James Wan to direct this movie. And like I said, so you got Statham is out there hunting our family. You know, the family is said so many times throughout this movie. And so the crew being hunted and, you know, killed in some cases are then hired by, bring it on, Kurt Russell.
Right on.
Kurt Russell hires them to find this hacker who, with the technology that she has, will be able to find Jason Statham's character wherever he goes, so they can track him down, and so he won't be hunting them.
Right.
The problem with that is that every time they're going after the hacker, Statham's already there, so they don't really need to find him. Anyway, he's always just showing up and just tormenting our characters. So there's really no need for this, like, these side missions and stuff. But you know, as ridiculous as the action has gotten in the other movies, they're just tripling down on just how crazy they get with the action sequences. And I have to admit that it finally won me over.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and part of that is directly due to director James Wan, who I think handles the action sequences as best as they've ever been handled throughout this series. There's, you know, he pulls back from sequences. They're really kind of nicely edited. There's a lot going on in the action sequences. And it's just fun. It's the kind of movie that you just kind of laugh at the craziness that's going on. And, you know, I don't really give a lick about who these people are. But the action sequence, you know, when you have, you know, The Rock, you know, sidelined for half the movie, but then just, like, tears off all of his hospital wounds to, you know, to take a minigun from a helicopter and just start shooting at people down the street. I mean, seriously, the carnage they leave in Los Angeles at the end of this movie is, like, second only to Man of Steel.
Outstanding.
It's just crazy. So Furious 7, you know, there won't be a dry eye in the house.
Yeah.
So to speak, this thing is going to be a monster when it opens in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I, for one, I'm fine. You know, yeah, Kurt Russell, and they're just bringing in, you know, Tony Jaa's in the movie, for God's sakes. They just ramped up the cast, and they ramped up the action, and yes, you are going to lose your mind.
I'm going to lose. And by the way, it's 137 minutes long.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I think the climax goes on for about a half hour.
All right, man. Does it have a really, really long runway?
No, it does not have a really long runway.
That was in the last movie, longest runway ever.
Longest runway ever. and stealing more than a few nods from the last Mission Impossible movie, too.
All right. I'm in, man. All right. Furious 7, April 3rd. You saw it at South by Southwest. What else you got?
Well, Sunday night at South by was the night we call the Night of Independent Cinema.
Okay.
Not only did we have Furious 7, but we had a double feature from the guys that brought us Freaks and Geeks, Judd Apatow and Paul Feig. And the first movie on that slate was Apatow's latest, Trainwreck.
That's Amy Schumer, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer, who stars in the movie and wrote the screenplay. She plays a woman who was sort of, if you will, brainwashed into the sort of the evils of monogamy by her dad, Colin Quinn, when she was only like 9, 10 years old. So she has grown up living a life of very freewheeling, very casual sex, never wanting to get into a relationship. And she works for a magazine and gets an assignment to interview the hot new sports doctor on the scene, played by Bill Hader.
Yeah.
So the two of them begin to form a relationship. And, you know, as you know, the plotting goes, you know where this is going, that she's going to sort of begin to let her guard down and sort of accept this sort of burgeoning relationship that's occurring between the two of them. And I know that you have not been a fan of Apatow's work for quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, the last couple movies.
Yeah.
A lot of people have not been a fan of the last two movies, Funny People and This Is 40. This is certainly the best thing he has done since Knocked Up. And a big part of that is reason for that is Amy Schumer, who I think is just such an immense comic talent. I just adore everything she does.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, on her show, if people who haven't seen her show, Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central, are really missing something really unique and special and edgy, you know, the way comedy should be. And she's really good in the movie. She's a fine actress. The screenplay, the movie is 2 hours long. It is Apatow-ish that you could certainly see some scenes being cut. It was billed as a work in progress, so we might see some scenes cut. But this movie is so funny, so consistently funny, too, by the way. Bill Hader is really terrific in it as well. This movie is so funny. LeBron James is funny in this movie. LeBron James has, like, a legitimate supporting role in this movie as himself, playing a very cheap version of himself.
Yeah.
That is consistently hilarious. You get an Apatow movie, you're going to get tons of cameos.
Sure.
These days, and almost all the cameos get laughs. Really funny stuff. I really think you're going to like this one a lot.
Okay, cool. Trainwreck, and it doesn't actually open until July.
July 17th.
July 17th, but Eric got to see it at South by Southwest. Eric, hang on, okay? And we'll come back and we'll talk about the Paul Feig movie, okay?
Okay.
All right, hang on 1 second. That's Eric Childress has given us reviews of some of the movies he saw at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas. We'll take a quick break on 720 WGN. Yeah. All right. Did our movie reviews, did our box office, and now we are getting a review of many of the movies that Eric Childress saw at the South by Southwest Film Festival, many of which, almost all of which, we will see at some point, but you're getting a full preview right here on WGN. So let's welcome Eric back. All right, Eric, tell us about the Paul Feig movie.
Okay. Well, it is simply called Spy, and it's his third movie in a row with Melissa McCarthy. And she stars as a CIA analyst who's not just someone who sits at the computer, but is someone who is sort of actively involved in the missions of the actual spies pulling the job. She's able to have all the heat sensors, so she knows when people are right around the corner, so she can help a spy played by Jude Law complete his mission. And she's, you know, she starts out the movie kind of mousy and whatnot, and then when something happens to Jude Law's character, she gets thrust in the role of an actual spy. She actually has the training necessary, but has never been put into the field. So she gets put into this sort of elaborate international conspiracy thing that involves a real very hilarious Rose Byrne, also from Bridesmaids, and Bobby Cannavale, and also Jason Statham. Who is a fellow CIA agent who is in many ways sort of lampooning the idea of what a James Bond character is and really kind of sending up his own image as a tough guy in a way. I never thought I'd say this, but this is a film that actually could use more Statham.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This might be the finest work of Statham's career in this movie. He is so funny in the film. And the film, generally, is pretty funny. The longer it goes on, the more you sort of see just what a goofy lark the entire movie is. I mean, nothing in the movie is to be taken seriously, and it almost seems that the characters, the actors, are just sort of making things up as they go along, just to insult each other further. Melissa McCarthy kind of starts off the movie playing closer to her Gilmore Girls character and ends up playing closer to her Heat character throughout the course of the movie. So it's kind of like, you know, a colleague of mine was there with me. He said, like, that movie was kind of just funny enough. And that's kind of the best review I can give of the movie. It's just kind of, you know, it reminded me a lot of The Heat in a way, and that a film that kind of started off kind of, this is okay kind of thing, and then it kind of gets funnier the longer it goes on. But even by the end, I was saying that movie needed more Statham.
Yeah. I don't think I'd ever heard you say that before.
No, and here's a funny little tidbit about that night, is that Spy was the 9 o'clock movie, and the entire cast was there. McCarthy, Cannavale, Byrne, and Statham was there. And then the midnight screening was Furious 7.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody told Statham. Because they had the producer, Neil Moretz, come out to introduce the movie, and he in turn introduced James Wan, who was there, and then their big reveal, Tyrese.
What?
But not Statham. I'm like, he was just here an hour ago. Didn't anyone tell Statham that they were screening his movie? Very weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
That is weird. All right. What else did you see?
A couple movies opening in April. One of them I think you're going to find interesting called Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the trailer for this.
Yeah, this is directed by Alex Garland. He's probably very well known for writing a couple of Danny Boyle's sci-fi movies. He wrote 28 Days Later as well as Sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his directorial debut. Story sets sometime in the future where Domhnall Gleeson is a programmer at a big company who wins the sort of contest to spend a week at the home of the sort of the isolated founder of the company, this robotics engineering genius played by the great Oscar Isaac. And he has developed a form of artificial intelligence. So he's using Domhnall Gleeson to sort of as sort of a test pattern in a way to sort of connect with the artificial intelligence played by Alicia Vikander.
Mm-hmm.
She's got sort of a human face, and she's obviously got robot parts showing. And it's basically this sort of this back and forth to sort of discover just exactly how human she is. And then it turns into kind of a chess match in a way as to what everyone's real intentions are throughout this film. Sort of a sideline that we've had these sort of these artificial intelligence movies over the last couple of years. We just had Chappie, which kind of fell on his face. We had Transcendence last year.
Yeah.
This is a film that that does connect. I don't think it's fantastic science fiction, but it's good science fiction. Anytime you get good science fiction, it's definitely worth taking a look at. Oscar Isaac is particularly terrific in his movie. It's good. It's a movie that, sci-fi, fans will really enjoy. It's not really an action-packed type movie. It's a very talky picture, but the special effects are solid and the acting is even better.
Okay, cool. All right. Now you said there's another one that's coming out in April that you just saw.
Yeah, another horror film called Unfriended.
I saw the trailer for this.
Seen the trailer for this, yeah. It was originally called Cybernatural. It's been changed to Unfriended. And this is another, found footage. We've seen found footage exhausted to death, and it seems the new found footage now is people creating movies that exist entirely on computer windows.
Right.
We saw Open Windows came out last year. We saw that. Even an episode of Modern Family did this gimmick.
Did they really?
A few weeks ago, yeah.
Okay.
So this is a story of a group of friends who are talking via Skype and online and whatnot, and then they start receiving mysterious messages from an account of a fellow student and friend of theirs who committed suicide a year ago. It's the anniversary. And they start receiving these cryptic messages, and whoever is doing it is getting them to sort of reveal secrets about each other to each other, as well as some of them who might have been having some involvement in the sort of cyberbullying that led to this girl's suicide.
Oh, okay.
So the entire movie is done entirely as a computer window. So you're going to hear the Skype sound a lot. You're going to hear, a lot of clicks and bells and whistles and things like that.
Yeah.
As a film, that style, could be irritating to some people and certainly in the wrong hands. But this movie actually really worked for me. It's got a pace. It really has a great pace to it. Even though, it's not a movie you're going in there for logic, obviously. You can kind of see where it's going a little bit, but it actually makes some nice twists and turns to really sort of keep you into it. And like I said, it's a really fast movie. It's only like 80 minutes long, so it never really quite wears out its welcome. And by the end, I was very much sold on this movie. I think this is a really nice creeper that's coming out April 17th.
April 17th is the date that I'm looking at, yeah.
Yeah. Universal picked this thing up last year at some point, and it's another one from the Jason, the Blumhouse camp, who do a lot of really interesting cheap horror productions and make a lot of money from them, and I think people are going to like this one.
You know, it sounds to me like this is going to be a pretty good year for horror.
Well, I hope it's shaping up that way.
I mean, you know, like you've just given us like that during the movie reviews, we've had like two horror movies in the movie review segment that were both mm-hmm. good. And then this one, and then, you know, so yeah, I'm looking up.
Well, certainly starting that way, and you know, it's funny that these both Sundance and South by Southwest, actually the midnight films were actually not very well selected. Sundance in particular was pretty bad mm-hmm. this year, so maybe by next year this horror is not going to look too good. But in South by there are one or two. And one of them I wouldn't even classify as a horror movie. This didn't play in the midnight section, but I do have another one, again, that did not play in the midnight section that has got a very interesting premise as well.
Well, give me a quick review because we're running out of time, but okay. Give me a quick review of it.
Well, it's called The Final Girls. It's a really great cast. Thaisa Farmiga, Aaliyah Shawkat, Nina Dobrev, Malin Ackerman. And it's a story of Thaisa Farmiga plays a girl whose mother, Malin Ackerman, was in a horror movie in the 80s, Camp Bloodbath. After her mom passes away in a tragic car accident, on sort of the year anniversary of the film, there's a special screening. Her and her friends go to the screening. There's a fire that breaks out in the theater, and to escape, they end up going into the screen and end up in the movie from the 1980s. So it also stars Thomas Middleditch from Silicon Valley.
Oh, sure.
He's also in the movie. He's sort of the geeky guy that knows everything about the movie. So you have a movie that's sort of like Pleasantville for horror movies in a way.
All right.
Yeah, and it's a film. And also Adam Devine from Workaholics.
Yes.
And then he plays the guy in the horror movie who is sort of like the sexed up jock character. So funny in the film.
Yeah.
It's a film that sort of alternates from being too clever and then sometimes not so clever. It doesn't always find the sort of happy medium that it's going for. But the performances are actually really good. It actually gets kind of heartfelt at times. The movie actually features both maybe one of the funniest and one of the most heartfelt stripteases ever captured on film.
Okay.
And it's a fun little movie. It's not great, but I mean, as premises go, it's a fun one, and the cast does what they can with it.
Awesome.
Pretty good.
All right, that's The Final Girls. It's probably going to be. It looks like it's going to be released in March.
So still waiting for distribution.
All right, cool. So that's The Final Girls. All right, and by the way, you've got a whole bunch of stuff online that you're writing about in terms of South by Southwest, and also at Letterboxd.com, you have a ranking of the movies that you saw.
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing a recap piece for RogerEbert.com as well, and that should be up in the next day or two.
Cool. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for the report, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Take care. Eric Childress will be back next week for more movie reviews on 720.